Thanks for joining us on the Port City Church podcast. More information about Port City Church is available at portcitychurch.org.
Good morning. It's great to see all of you guys here. Welcome all of our campuses together. As y'all can see, I got a cool new, you actually can't see it, you can see it now. I got a cool new thing up here they let me draw on. And it looks like this. And today we're going to go ahead so you can kind of see this. All right, we're going to talk about really what do we care about? What is it that you and I care about? And the series is called Lean In, because that's what I want you to do. I love Richard's story. I've known Richard for several years, and he's been involved with Habitat for Humanity. Many of you are familiar with that organization. And interestingly enough, Richard started just like you said. He just wanted to do something, and so we linked up. We have lots of great partners that we do things with in our city and around our region and, in fact, around the world. And he wanted to do something. I remember this had been going on for quite some time, or a couple years, I guess. And about 3 years ago, they invited me to come down and do speak at their Golden Hammer, be a part of their Golden Hammer Breakfast, which is the fundraising efforts of Habitat for Humanity. So they invited me down there, and I was going to go in there and give the speech about raising money, like, you got to give till it hurts and do all that stuff. And so that was my job in there. So as I walked in to the breakfast, I was sitting at the table, and Richard was at the table, and I walked to him. I said, "Hey, Richard." I said, "Do you know why I'm here?" He said, "Yeah, because you're like the pastor of the church." I said, "No, I'm here because of you. I'm here because of you, because you decided at some point in time to do something. And now what has happened through your efforts is we send scores and scores and scores of volunteers down there. And we've actually developed a partnership that makes a difference in the lives of so many people." In fact, I talked to Richard afterwards, and he was telling me about just how his own walk has just changed because of what God has been doing in his life through simply deciding, "I'm going to go and do something about this one thing." He told me also that he just talked to two girls who had just come back from Guatemala, a trip to Guatemala, and the reason they went to Guatemala is because they first swung a hammer at Habitat for Humanity. Thought, "I can do one thing," and it led to something else, to something else, to something else. One of the other cool things, he sent me an email. His birthday was October 15th, which is the day that they filmed the video. And he emailed me, he says, "Mike, no one knew where I was going, and my wife said, 'What are you doing for your birthday?' He says, 'I'm going to do something for myself.'" And he went and he shared his story with the rest of us to let us know. And I think the most profound thing about it is what he said was at the end, that we don't serve because there are needs that need to be met. We serve because we serve a God who that reflects his heart more and better than anything else we can do. And that's what I want us to talk about. That's what I want us to think about over the next few weeks together as you look at this series called Lean In. Now, I assume that all of you know that our world has a lot of issues. Y'all know this? Okay. Just making sure we're on the same page. Lots and lots of issues. And as we think about the issues, one of my assumptions is that we all know and understand there are significant issues in the world around us. In fact, the election that is about to happen is all about the issues, right? It's all about the issues. It's all about who can handle them, who can't handle them. It's all about the stuff. And I know y'all are all excited about the election coming up, and right? And I would tell you this, we have an opportunity to do some things that go far beyond anything that we see. And I think a lot of us get overwhelmed by the issues. And I will say one more thing, too, is you need to go vote. You should have already voted, and you need to go vote. And the reason is, not because of one candidate or the other, the reason is because there are a lot of folks I know personally that are in our military, and they serve all over the world to give us the freedom to do what we get to do. And we get to vote, and people don't shoot at us or threaten us. And that is a really precious thing, so you need to take advantage of it, okay? Enough. All right, back to this. Now, so we live in a world, and we know that there are people that are stolen, they're sold, they're manipulated, they're oppressed. We see this all over the news every time we turn the TV on. We have a crisis of refugees, millions of refugees with no place to go, widows and orphans, children, I mean, the like. We have a crisis of integrity in most places in our leadership, a crisis in education, crisis in the decency of humanity, issues of hygiene, issues of leadership, there are issues of hunger right here in our own city, in the cities that we are located, right around us, homelessness, and it all breeds a sense of hopelessness. And a lot of us, we see this, and we're just so overwhelmed with all the things that need to be done, we wind up doing nothing. And I don't say that to make you feel guilty. I say that because there's a lot of a normal, natural sort of progression is the way this happens in us. And a lot of times we sort of think of ourselves as being indifferent, but we're not indifferent. That's not the right way to think about this. There's something else going on. In fact, I've really been thinking about this, and the reason we titled the series Lean In is because of a commercial. And I don't know if I'm going to sing this song, and I'm not going to sing it well, but I want you to just think about the image that comes to your mind when I start singing the song. In the arms of an angel, right? And like some of you are going, I don't know what he's talking about. And all of a sudden, some of you saw like dogs in cages, right? Sarah McLachlan, it's like the TV. Like, what happens to all of us? I mean, I can't even listen to Sarah McLachlan anymore because of this. And what happens as soon as the song, the TV comes on, dogs in cages, right? The little puppy dog eyes, please. And in the arm, what do you do? What's the first thing you do? You grab the remote control and you're like turning the channel as fast as you can. Anything other than this. Because it causes such a, I can't take this anymore. I got to get out of here. And like I honestly don't. Every time the TV commercial comes on, I turn the channel. Every time the song comes on, I can't listen to her music anymore because I see dogs in cages. And I think that's a good thing. But what it does is it speaks to what happens to all of us, whether it's dogs in cages or maybe commercials that show little children starving with flies and the other such, or maybe a gentleman on the side of the road with a cardboard sign. What is our tendency? Our tendency is to look at the dashboard, reach in our Chick-fil-A bag and pretend we didn't see it, or to try to do something else, because most of us have enough stuff to care about right in our own little worlds. We don't think we have enough capacity to care for anything other than ourselves. And the more we focus on that, the more we should get locked into that, we realize that really the main thing that we care about is ourselves. And then we go, oh, well, the church comes, oh, you should feel guilty about that. And so that's actually not what we should do. We should spend very little time feeling guilty about that. Instead of start asking ourselves, what is it that we care about really? What is it we care about? What are we called to care about? How does this actually happen in our lives? Because when I grew up, in fact, this series, when I was telling some of the folks about this, they said, Mike, what are you preaching on? And I said, missions. They said, oh my gosh. Because if you grew up in the church like me, missions was whenever missionaries would come and teach on missions, it was always slideshows of people in Africa. And I'm thinking, God, don't send me to Africa. God, don't send me to Africa. God, don't send me to Africa. God, don't send me. All I'm doing is just fighting this sense of guilt that I'm not doing what God had called me to do. And in fact, people who would go to Africa were always the people that I thought were like, oh, wow, they're like super Christians and way better than me. And so I grew up with this sort of understanding of what missions is and what it wasn't. And really what it is, it's about you and I learning to lean in. The way I've written this in my notes is this, that indifference is a response to protect our hearts. The reason you pick up the remote control and turn the channel, or the reason you look down at your Chick-fil-A, or the reason you avoid all the issues that we face in our world is simply as an effort to protect your own heart. Because you realize somewhere you just can't take anymore. And that's a very normal condition. It's a very normal thing for you and I to do. This is why what God has done for us is so important for us to understand, and how it affects us in the way in which we leverage our lives in the lives of other people. If we start thinking about this long enough, and if you've been around, this is how I think of this, right? We think of the idea of encounter. If you've been around, encounter, which is the things that we collide with, the things that we see, it leads to formation, which is where our hearts actually get changed. And then over here, we talk about expression. And basically, this is the idea that everything that you see in your life comes out of your heart somewhere. And your heart is in the condition that it's in because of something that has happened, occurred, something you've seen, your experience. And I think about it like this. When it comes down, we're looking at this now, I often talk about it. Encounter starts with your eyes. It's what you see. It's the way in which you see the world around you. But encounters also happen through our experiences. And this is one of the reasons that we do a lot of the things we do here at Port City Church, is to be able to provide experiences for you. Experiences you can step into that do something in your heart that make a difference in the way that you live your life. That's the idea. And what happens is, for a lot of us, the driving force in so much of what happens, our motivation, is based on sort of a sense of fear. If this doesn't happen, the whole world is going to be over. If this doesn't get solved, people are going to die. And it's always sort of driven to guilt you, to shame you, to make you feel bad, to make you feel afraid that if this thing doesn't happen, then the whole world's going to be over. And what this leads us to do is ultimately to focus on the issues. And it doesn't matter what you're talking about. It always comes down to the issues, whether it's something to do with political issue, or something to do with animals, or something to do with some government policies or moral policies or whatever. This is always going to lead us to issues. And I don't know how many of you guys are passionate about issues. Anybody in here passionate about issues, right? Some of you are. Some of us are like, I'm very, very passionate about a lot of issues. And I've had to think and say, all right, God, what do you want me to do in this? How do we learn how to deal with what's happening in our world? And it's not just the big political issues. It's the things that have to do with the big things we have to solve, education and hunger and the plight of a lot of folks in our own city and region, let alone around the world. How do we do this well as a church? And what's expected of us, and what's expected of you? What I've been learning and what I want to challenge us to do is learning to lean in. And by that, I mean like when the commercial comes on, instead of grabbing the remote control and turning the channel, to actually grab the remote control, want to turn the channel and set it down, and then just lean in a little. When it comes to all the issues that we face in the world, instead of just spouting off an opinion that we heard somewhere else, let's actually lean in order to look at it a little differently. And the reason is because we have to learn to lean in order to understand, or you will more than likely look away and ignore. That's the condition that we live in. And while most of us, the emotion of it is so, you know, compelling for us to just turn and look away, than it is to actually lean in, because we lean in, we think we got to know everything. We don't. You just got to lean in to understand. You got to lean in and say, what is going on here really? What's happening? And that's the posture that I want us to take in the series, is just to lean in to understand in order to help us, prevent us from turning around and looking away. I want us to look at this from a couple passages in the Bible. One is found in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. One is found in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. And it's a beautiful passage. There's a verse in there that many of you will be familiar with. The other one is a little scene from Jesus. There are a lot of verses that I grew up hearing about all the time that I did not like because they made me feel guilty that I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. It was a lot of the verses about evangelism, go out into the world and all those types of things, and I didn't like them because I thought God wanted me to go to Africa or go knock on people's doors, and I didn't want to do either one of those things. And so I avoided them. And so over the years, I've grown in my maturity, and I began to read them again. And when you read the story of Jesus, particularly recorded for us in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, you notice a lot of things about Jesus. He was constantly confounding people in their way in which they thought about the world around them. And more than that, he was constantly just turning everybody's apple carts upside down about the way they thought of people. And this is especially jolting for me. I remember one time when the disciples the people weren't being obedient. And the disciples have been with Jesus for a while. They're like, hey, Jesus, you want us to call some fire down and just kill them all? You ever thought about that? That'd be a good solution. Sometimes you're like, hey, let's just get rid of all of them. Jesus, let me take care of this. Kaboosh, right? And Jesus is like, no, I actually wish I could gather them together. I wish I could get them together so they would understand how it is and what it is that they've been made for. Like there was something in him that challenged everything. It wasn't about getting all the issues solved. It was something else going on here. So this one scene, Jesus is, he's fed the 5,000. The people are sort of in disarray, and there's a lot going on. And Jesus is another scene where people are gathered around him. And this was all the time. And in Matthew chapter 9, we find these three verses, 36, 37, and 38. And it's just a little quick little story. And it says, when Jesus saw the crowds, well, look at this. When Jesus saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and they were helpless like sheep without a shepherd. Now, if you think about this, it reads kind of like, you know, just a nice little sentence, a good description. But you got to think about how it got to be this way. This wasn't like Jesus tweeted this out. He didn't say, you know, at the thing, sheep like a shepherd, you know, hashtag Jesus rules or something. It wasn't anything like that. There was some way in which he communicated this to those who wrote it down, to Matthew, so it would get written down. And what he did, the first thing you notice is that Jesus saw the crowds. He looked at them and he noticed, not just that there was a lot of them or there were many of them, he noticed them. He noticed their condition. He said they are harassed and they're helpless. They're wandering around without aim or purpose. There's something missing. Yeah, the description, he said, what's a good metaphor? It's like a sheep without a shepherd. Sheep aren't like rebellious animals when they're like not without a shepherd. They just kind of do their own thing and they wander off and get lost. And the description was that people, it's not that we're, you know, doing rebellious stuff. It's that we're just wandering around. They're lost. They're like sheep without a shepherd. That was his description. And it says that he had compassion on them. All of a sudden, we begin to see something about God's heart, about the heart of Jesus, to say he had compassion on people. I begin to think, how often do I have compassion on people? And you have to start backing up and going, well, maybe not as often as I would like to think that I would. So what does Jesus tell them to do? So Jesus says to his disciples, verse 37, the harvest is plentiful, but the laborers are few. He looks out. He says, all these folks, there's so much potential here. It's like a harvest ready to bear fruit, but there's no one there to get it. They're like sheep without a shepherd. He notices this. He describes it. What you see is the understanding that is required in order for us to do things, to involve ourselves. We spend so much time trying to understand the issues, and oftentimes we forget the most important part of this whole idea. You see, look at the last thing that Jesus told them to do. In verse 38, he says this, therefore, I don't want you to form a committee and go get a think tank to solve some issues. What I want for you to do is I want you to pray that God, the Lord of the harvest, would send out people to invest in the lives of other people. I want you to take and send out laborers into the harvest. The laborers are people. The harvests are people. I want you to find people to go and get involved in the lives of other people. God, the compassion of God moved them to tell us to pray for that. And what we intend to do is go, yeah, that's a good prayer. God, pray for them as they go. That's not what he's asking you to do. He's asking for you to pray about you because he sort of tagged you in part of this. We'll talk about that in just a minute. A couple of things I noticed real quickly just by way of observation. Number one is Jesus noticed the condition of people. When's the last time you've actually noticed the condition of a person? Not the issues that they're struggling with, not the issues that are on the table, the person. One of our mantras around Port City is we try to remember this all the time, that we say that the people in the seats are more important than the issues on the table. That is really, really important when you're dealing with stuff, especially with stuff when you don't agree on certain things. Jesus noticed the condition of the people. He looked at this person and he was brokenhearted for their condition. He had compassion on them for where they were. Number two is Jesus prayed that people would go. He didn't pray for some kind of program to be established or some kind of organization to be formed. He prayed that people would just go. And this is what I love about Richard's story. It was just someone who just went. Is the organization important? You bet. Habitat for Humanity is so important. But the goal, the idea was that he just went. The reason we got to be a part of what God was doing through Richard at Habitat for Humanity is because Richard actually was the church in that area, which is kind of the design. I can't tell you how many times people can say, Mike, I got an idea. Y'all ought to do this. I'm like, well, why ain't you a part of y'all? And maybe you ought to go do this. And then in you doing it, we will actually do it. There's a novel concept. This is the way it's supposed to work. You see, missions is this idea that it's for someone else or some elite Christians, and it's not. It's just when you and I start to lean in. You ever thought about what really drives hunger? You ever thought about what really drives some of the vulnerability issues that we have in our inner cities? You ever really thought about it? You go down, I remember going down, we were down at one of the elementary schools not too long ago, and we were meeting with some of the teachers and talking to them and just kind of getting a feel, and one of the ladies was telling us a story. There's a kid, and he was just having all kinds of issues, discipline issues. You're like, man, I know what I would do if it was his dad. And then she tells us his story. And you realize, oh my, something way different going on there. You know, it's interesting. A lot of us live our lives. We try to solve issues because of fear. You know what drives out fear? 1 John, it says, perfect love drives out fear. And we learn to care, to have compassion. What happens is the issues get replaced by the people on the other end of the issues. When's the last time take your big issue that you love and you're passionate about and you've met someone on the other end of that issue? Like you sat down with them and leaned in to understand where they are, who they are, why this is, what's going on, and what can we really do to help? You see, one of the things we've come to believe, because a lot of folks who live like this, and there are a lot of churches and good organizations that deal with it this way. A lot of the drive is out of guilt. Well, you have a lot, and they don't have much, and you should feel bad, so you should take what you have and give it to them. That's a lot of the way a lot of people are motivated. We feel badly about what we have, so we're going to take what we have, and we're going to give it to other people. There's other folks who use the idea of pity. We just feel bad for them, so we're going to go help them out. We're going to sort of feel sorry. That doesn't advance dignity in the life of human beings. It may solve a particular issue, but it doesn't advance dignity. There's something bigger going on. And there's other things we could talk about in this, but a lot of these, they wind up become expressions of something, of guilt, of sorrow. Maybe it's of indifference, or maybe it's of superiority. For some people, this idea of humanity or humanitarian indifference, I better finish that. For some of us, the issue of of humanity or humanitarian efforts emerges from a view of superiority. We think we're just better. In fact, it's kind of cool. Now you won't even buy your coffee from somewhere that doesn't do stuff for the poor. You're like, oh, you don't do stuff for the poor. We ain't buying coffee from you. It's like hip to do things for people who are less fortunate than ourselves. And those are all good things, but they're fundamentally humanitarian. And there's something else at stake. There's some other way in which we are called to this. One of the things that we believe at Port City Church is that missions is an expression of discipleship. Our missions efforts in our city, in our region, in our world aren't to alleviate our responsibility that we have or feel like we have. Our missions efforts really are to reflect the way in which we mature as a body. This is big for all of us, right? Because if we don't, we want our missions efforts to be an expression of what it is that God is actually doing in the heart of our church, of me and you. And this is where I want to sort of push. Because what happens is a lot of us, we just sort of sit around and we feel bad, or we wait until we start to care about the right things and go, ooh, I know. And I don't know about you, I've heard people who said some of this, Mike, and I don't mean anything disparaging about this, Mike, I just have a heart for the nations. And I'm really glad. But that's not me. I'm like, if I'm honest, sometimes I'm going, I got a heart for me. Anybody else been there? I got a heart, my heart's for me. And all of a sudden you start to realize, how in the world do we get this? Because what we wind up doing is we look at people and we say, oh, you got a heart for this. God must have done something that's different than what he's doing in me. And the only thing I can do is keep my own little world together. And so we feel bad or we feel guilty. Maybe I'll do something one day. And instead of starting to say, what does it look like for us to develop compassion? How do you get compassion really? How do you start to care about things? Did you know that you can actually learn to care about things? There are things that I care about very naturally. I care about volleyball very naturally. I love volleyball. It's just here. Surfing's the same way. I love to surf. It's just here. Nobody has to get me worked up about it. I will tell you, I did not like ballet until my daughter took ballet. Then I loved ballet. You know what I did? I learned how to care. I didn't like soccer that much. Didn't like soccer that much. Don't understand all the rules. So I'm like, what is offsides? Like, what is that even? And yesterday, I drove 3.5, almost 4 hours to go watch a team play soccer. I was very interested. I cared deeply about soccer. Do you know why? Because I knew some people on the team. You can learn how to care about things. That is, you've got to start inclining. You've got to put your heart in a direction. You've got to do some things, some experiences, some encounters. Put your eyes on some things that are going to actually move your heart in a direction to care. A lot of us are sitting around waiting to feel like we care about things. Then we just feel badly. We don't care about things that other people care about. And that's not the way we get change. It's not the way we make a difference. It's interesting. This is how he writes it in 2 Corinthians chapter 5. It says this. And this is a little bit of a lengthy passage. I want to read this to you, so we can understand maybe a little bit more about this. It opens up in verse 14. It says, the love of Christ controls us because we have concluded this. This is Paul writing about his motive for going out and doing what he's doing, which is telling everybody about Jesus and investing in communities all over the Middle East and Greek and all over in there. For the love of Christ controls us, because we have concluded this, that one has died for all, and therefore all have died. Basically what he's saying is this: we are convinced that everybody apart from Christ is dead in their sin, and that what Jesus has done has made us right with God. We believe fundamentally that you were made for God, you were separated from him because of sin, Jesus is taking care of your sin, and if you get with Jesus, you'll be right with God, and that's what you're made for anyway. So it's really that simple. That's what I believe. People ask me, say, Mike, do you ever get discouraged? And there are times when I do, but do I get worried about the church or the politics or whatever? The answer is no, I don't. I don't. And I'll tell you why. Because nowhere in the Bible, nowhere in any of the things that God has given us, does it say that the government of the United States or any other country in the world is the hope of the world. It doesn't say that. It does say that the church is the hope of the world, and that has existed before, and it will continue to exist long after whatever happens in our elections, and we can be okay with that, okay? It's okay. So it says we've got to be moved, that we've got to be moved. You and I as individuals have to be compelled, have to be moved by this. And so it says here that he's convinced this, that all have died, and one person has died, and he did that for the sake of everybody else. And he goes on, he says this, and he died for all, so that those who might live no longer live for themselves, but for him who for their sake was died and raised. So what he's talking about here is exactly what Richard said at the end of his story. He said, I used to think that doing good things was a way to sort of earn me brownie points with God, that maybe I could save myself. Instead, what I realized was that when I serve other people, I'm just trying to be an expression of the love that God has for me. That's all it is. And that's it. It takes all the pressure off to try to prove or do whatever. It just allows us to be free, live free. We talked about this. And he goes on. He says, so because of this, there's three therefore statements in this passage. The first one is in 16. So from now on, therefore, because I'm convinced of this, we no longer regard anyone according to the flesh. Even though we once even regarded Christ in this way, we regard him, I love this, thus no longer. This is like English Standard Version, which is one of my favorite versions. But he basically says this, that we used to see things one way, and now we see them fundamentally differently. We no longer regard a human being based on just our own view of them. In fact, we're going to see them with some kind of way that allows us to see the heart of people, that allows compassion to develop in our hearts. He keeps going. Here's the second, therefore, and this is one that you may be familiar with. Therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creature. The old has passed away. Behold, all things are made new. It's a little bit different context. It's like this is framing the way in which he moves into the world because he believes that the possibility and the hope of every human being to be made new because of what Christ has done. Then he goes on and says, all this is from God, verse 18, who through Christ reconciled himself to us and gave us the ministry of reconciliation. This is basically what he says, that God reconciled you and then he said, tag, you're it. That's kind of the way this works. That is, in Christ, God was reconciling the whole world to himself, not counting their trespasses against them, because that would be what allows the separation to be gone. They are made for God. That's now true, and everything's right again. And then it says he entrusted us with the message of reconciliation. He's entrusted you with it right where you are. Therefore, here's another one, we are now ambassadors for Christ. You thought you worked for GE, right? No, you actually work for Christ. You're an ambassador for him in GE, or whatever it is. This is how it works, or whatever company you work for. We've now become ambassadors. We represent him in every realm of life where we live. And he tells us God is making his appeal through us. He is using you and I to say, man, let's set the world right. This is the call that we have. We implore you on behalf of Christ to be reconciled to God. Verse 21, for the sake of him who made him, for our sake, he made him who knew no sin to be sin so that we might be become the very righteousness of God. One of my favorite verses in the whole Bible. And you're probably maybe familiar with that one too. My point is really verse 14. It says, the love of Christ controls us. Now, the better word, in the NIV, the New International Version, says the love of Christ compels us. It moves us. What's interesting about this word is it means to sort of take this thing and compress it and enforce it in a direction. It's like a funnel. So what happens in this, if the love of Christ compels you, it doesn't mean you sit and go, let me feel the love of God, and then, oh, it makes me go. It's that somehow we are so filled with the love and life of God, my little sort of life, and it becomes a channel of God's love, and your little life becomes a channel of God's love, and all of a sudden together, the whole thing begins to work together to sort of impact, to move outward into the world as our hearts become more aligned with his. And so that doesn't solve the question, how do we get our hearts to feel that? How do we learn to care? How does this actually happen? Well, in there, you'll actually find a couple of things that are really important for us to understand. Because ultimately, when this happens, what we wind up doing as ambassadors is we simply bring the image of God to bear on the world around us. What I will tell you is this. If you live up here in this world, your hope is going to be dependent on a foundation that's going to change faster than you can stand. One day you're going to feel good, the next day you're going to feel bad. One day you're going to feel like, oh my gosh, this is going to make all the difference in the world. The next day you're going to feel like the whole world's going, you know, to pot. And down here, what you really need, this is why that passage is so important, what you need, if you're really going to learn how to care, number one is you've got to have a foundation that can support your hope. And if it's any circumstance or policy or elected official or program, you are in trouble. That's why he said, Paul says, what moves us is because we become convinced that what Christ did has done enough to change every single human being on the planet, if human beings will go to other human beings. You see, one of the things that I was reflecting on as I was writing this, and it really is kind of our heart for missions, that ultimately people are on the other end of issues that we address and are so passionate about. And therefore, we can't simply continue to form think tanks to solve problems or depend on programs to handle issues. The solution isn't politics and it isn't policies because the problem isn't the issues. The problem is first human, And the solution to human problems begin when we learn to care for humans behind the issues. That's what I want for us to learn how to do. You need a foundation of hope in order to begin that process. Some of us have become, and I say us, we can become so jaded with people because they do things. You're going, what are you doing, right? You've got to have a foundation that doesn't allow you to lose heart. You've got to have a foundation that doesn't allow you to lose heart. The gospel is that foundation. Number two, the second thing is, you actually have to see people. And I don't know how many of you struggle with this, but it's certainly something that, for me, takes a lot of effort because I'm usually on to things. I like vision. I like big picture ideas. I like ideas. So I get these ideas and just run past people. And you've got to stop and see people. On the other night, my oldest daughter turned 21. And so for her 21st birthday, that night, I took her to Target. That's well played. She and her sister and I, we all went to Target on her birthday that night. We went to Target. As we were coming in the parking lot, we pulled in, we got out, we were celebrating, woo, 21 at Target. And so we got out of the car, and we heard someone yelling like expletives, like really bad language. Well, my daughter said, Dad, did you hear that? I was like, no. And then we heard, oh, yeah, I did hear that. And so we got out of the car, we're heading in, and what evidently had happened, we saw this car speed up, so we drove by, sped up, turned around the corner outside of Target, and then came back down the parking lot so that his car was sort of perpendicular to her car across the way, and he rolled his window down. I hope he's not here today. Actually, it might be good if he was. And so he had yelled at her the first time, and he drove up and around, and he came back down, and then he pulled the car over again, rolled the window down, and began to just, I mean, words that I cannot believe you would say to another human being. And just screaming how stupid she was. And he said, you know, you ran the stop. Evidently, she ran the stop sign in the parking lot, and he almost hit her, which is terrible, I know. And so he wanted to make sure that she knew she did that, and he wanted to make sure that she knew how dumb she was and a host of other things that she was for doing that, and he let her have it. And so we kind of get up to close to the parking lot, and they were pulling off. He pulled up. I believe, if I recall this correctly, I think she backed out of the parking lot and came by, and I saw this teenage girl drive off, and then he kind of sped off behind her and got on her tail and did some other stuff. And I wonder what he saw in the car. Like, we know that she ran the stop sign. We know that. But I wonder what he saw in the car. If he would have stopped to see this, probably somebody's daughter, somebody's this, somebody, if he stopped to see to understand what's really going on. And I think sometimes we do this. We get so passionate about issues. And we get so worked up about getting our way that we forget that there are people on the other end of these issues. When it comes to learning compassion, whether it's hunger, whether it's homelessness, whether it's a lot of the big issues we face in our culture, it's not enough to just go, oh, the issue's got to go away. You've got to begin to see the people. The only way your heart is ever going to be awakened to develop compassion is when you see people. Now, if you're like me, most of us, we don't have time for this, right? That's why, who has time to care about more than what we can already care about? And so what we wind up doing is we sort of wait for our hearts to grow. Where I wrote this is, we don't have to wait to care. You have to learn how to care. You have to learn how to care by developing a foundation of hope, by seeing people, and ultimately, number three, is seeing or understanding that you have a role to play in a relationship. God said, pray that there would be workers that go into the fields that are ripe for harvest. Pray that you and I would actually move outward and involve ourselves in the lives of other people. You see, heard this line years ago, and it's bothered me, challenged me, made me cringe ever since. And the quote is this, that our hearts will shrink to the size of our greatest concern. Our hearts will shrink to the size of our greatest concern. We wake up in the morning, got to get dressed, got to get the kids to school, got to get this, got to get that, 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 got to get that. We realize that the whole entire day, our greatest concern was ourselves. And guess what happens to your heart? It just goes, shh. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking the same thing I'm thinking. Like, so how, what, because I don't have time. It's not a matter of time. It's not a matter of time. What you have to do is simply allow your concern to grow. Compassion starts, it begins when you and I start to care about something. You want compassion for people? Learn how to care about them. And you just got to start learning how to care. Because guess what happens when you start to grow concern for other people in your neighborhood, for other people on the other end of some of the issues that you're already passionate about? Guess what happens to you when you start to understand or grow concern for people who are on the other side of the world who don't have or this or that? When you start to have a compassion for the people on there, guess what happens to your heart? It begins to grow to the size of that concern. I remember hearing this at a missions conference, and the pastor at the end, he said, pastors, ask God to be concerned for the world. After he taught us about all the pressure we're always under, be concerned for the world. I'm like, oh, that was real helpful. And he said, you know why I asked you to do that? Not so you have more pressure, so you have bigger hearts, and that's what the world needs. You see, as you learn to be concerned about the things around you, really concerned about the people around you, your hearts are going to grow. And as the hearts grow, guess what? It's going to get expressed, because that's what we're designed to do. So here's what your homework is. It's real simple. All I want you to understand is that learning or leaning in to understand is the first step in learning to care. So if you're going to try to figure out how to care about things, you got to lean in to understand first. So whatever issue it is, find people. Go talk to them. Talk to people who are in it. Talk to people. We've got a host of things. All of our campuses, you're going to get cards with all of our partners. You can start anywhere. Start somewhere. Do something that's going to bring an encounter to you that's going to help your heart get a little bit bigger because you grow a little bit of concern. And when that happens in several thousand of us, that's how the world becomes different. As you and I get bigger hearts, and the way we get bigger hearts is to simply learn to care, because that's how we get bigger concerns. Make sense? Piece of cake. Let's pray together. God, thank you so much for calling us, for inviting us, for saying, hey, you're it. We're your ambassadors. God, we represent you well in some ways, and we represent you not so well in some ways. We ask that you would just convince us, keep us convinced. Father, give us eyes and experiences to help us to see and view the world differently, to see people. God, and that in doing that, our hearts would not be, oh, we feel guilty, but that you would actually allow them to expand, that we become compassionate people, and that we act on that compassion. God, help us to understand as we promise to lean in to do so. And I ask this in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ. Amen.